putting together an audio show which entertains and educates the globe is a piece of cake. When you've got the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Edition teams on the case for Siren 107.3 FM and sirenonline.co.uk.
And a very warm welcome to a special edition of the Midweek Drive, which looks back at some of those interviews you may have missed first time round in 2018. It's a family thing to do. Truly arrived when we start looking at the top 15 modern Christmas cracker jokes, and even more so when we actually welcome that bringer of the festive season and happiness throughout, ace critic, of course, Bruce Dessau. How are you, Bruce?
Good morning. Fine, thank you.
Excellent. I do know. It seems like only 364 days since we last spoke about top cracker jokes, and who would have thought it, eh? Still talking about Brexit. Never mind. Although I gather, in terms of the top 15 funniest new Christmas cracker jokes, it's the President of the United States who actually makes it at number one. Unbelievable.
Yes, funny enough, I feel like I'm doing the pop charts here, and yes, last year Theresa May was number one. Mm. Theresa May has slipped down to number two in the chart.
This is dreadful. I mean, she's had to put back the vote, she had to sort out various other bits of business. And actually, if I was given a choice, I think I prefer this to the winner. Let's use it in our usual delivery way. I'll feed you the punchline, and you can actually deliver the punchline with your effortless style. So here it goes. Why is Theresa May encouraging board games at Christmas?
Because she's trying to bring back checkers.
Excellent.
Which, again, was very topical when the competition ran about 2 weeks ago, but politics run so fast. You know, we chose the winner, and then, you know, I mean, if we did the competition today, you know how it runs. It's people enter via Twitter. People send the jokes in on Twitter, and then I drew up a shortlist with UKTV, Gold, the TV channel. They helped to draw up the shortlist because it ties in with their Christmas TV schedules, and they've got things like Vicar of Dibley, the Royal Family, Gavin and Stacey. So we all drew up shortlists between us, and then the public, again, this is democracy in action. The public vote for the winners. So it's not always, yes, people might not always agree with which does well in these charts.
Well, we'll reveal the winning joke, of course, in a few moments. Of course, it was Michael Hughes, who received £1,500 towards a holiday and a box of bespoke gold Christmas crackers. I mean, that's priceless, surely. I mean, you know, they go on eBay in 30 years' time. You could be a billionaire.
I know. I don't know. It must have a dilemma. Do you open the crackers on Christmas Day and, you know, you see your own name in the crackers? Or, as you say, do you stick them up in the attic as a sort of family heirloom to sell off one day? Because they are definitely a unique prize. So it is a nice prize. Certainly a nice place to have. Yes,
that's true. And one of the things that struck me, Bruce, about looking at the top 15 jokes, of course, was that even more so than previous years, they seem to have a very short shelf life. I mean, there's one which I thought, well, you need to have a lot of cultural reference to appreciate what is Meghan buying Harry, William and Charles for Christmas.
Yes, you have to be a fan of the TV show Suits.
Absolutely,
Suits,
exactly.
Which is her, you know... Well, I think it might be the only, certainly her biggest show that she acted in. But yes, I mean, or you have to, maybe you have to be an art, a fan of modern art to get, what did Banksy serve with his Christmas turkey? Shred sauce.
Exactly.
Because he shredded that picture a few months ago.
Yes, yeah.
But yes, I think it's, I think, you know, it's they have that sort of topical thing, and, you know, I think the jokes that do well are the jokes that combine something maybe that is topical with a Christmas reference. So shred sauce. There's another one, you know, if you're a fan of Love Island, I quite like this Love Island one. What's the difference between the Love Island villa and the stable where Jesus was born? The stable has had some wise men in it.
Yes, I did like that.
Although, having said that, that one could run any year that Love Island goes out, I suppose. Yeah. You could run that joke every year, basically.
Even just ahead of that, number five, when do sheep practice their new dance?
Yes, wild shepherds watch them floss by night.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that's got a sort of timelessness to it, to a certain extent, but...
Well, if you keep flossing, I mean, as long as people... It's flossing as in the dance, rather than flossing as in what you do with your teeth at bedtime.
That is true. You see, obviously, the cultural right... I mean, it was some sort of electric toothbrush reference, but no, clearly not at all from that point of view. Why has Debenhams been forced to cancel its Christmas nativity play? Good for Mike Ashley, I feel. No profit.
Yes, P-R-O-P-H-E-T, that is. Profit,
yes,
as in, exactly. They sort of have to have that, that sort of reference that you know, it's, I think some of the jokes are great, but as I said, the public vote for them, I don't choose them. I just sort of drew up the shortlist, and some of these that did well weren't necessarily on my shortlist. So, you know, jokes are sort of down to personal taste as well sometimes, and... You know, sometimes, and it's hard with Christmas cracker jokes because you want them to appeal to everyone, because you might be opening them around the Christmas table when you've got your gran there and your children there, and they've sort of got to appeal to everybody, but you want them to be clever as well. And I think the other thing about Christmas cracker jokes is the best ones, maybe you cringe as well as laugh. It's not just about, it's not like a joke you might see on, I think when you watch stand-up comedy on something like Live at the Apollo on the BBC, you just laugh at the jokes. But Christmas crackers are a slightly different breed of joke. I think cringing at them is maybe part of the fun. It's certainly part of the tradition.
Well, as you yourself are quoted as saying, Bruce, one thing that can be relied upon in increasingly unpredictable times is that whatever is going on in the world, the great British public will always retain their sense of humour. I thought that was a Churchillian statement, Bruce. I really did.
That's my mission statement of the year. Thank you.
It's phenomenal. OK, we've kept the audience in a suspense for far too long. And it's interesting, that line about not offending anybody or having challenges or maybe making people go, ugh. It's time for the reveal of the number one, as voted for by the British public, funniest new Christmas cracker joke for 2018. Once again, I'll deliver it. What does Donald Trump do after he pulls a cracker?
OK. And before I give the punchline, then, I should say that this is very much a joke.
Yes.
It's not a statement of fact.
It's not fake joke, surely.
Anyway, and the punchline is, before we forget the setup, the punchline is, pays her off.
Yeah.
It pulls a cracker.
Exactly. It could be a very stormy dime in the Trump household, is all I can say on that basis.
But as I said, this is what the public voted for. This is democracy in action.
And that's probably why we get the results we deserve when it comes to politicians. There's a whole dissertation to be written. Exactly. Let's talk briefly, Bruce, about best way to actually sort of enjoy Christmas with respect to Christmas Gold in December. Presumably just to access that on Sky 110, Virgin 124, BT and TalkTalk 310, on demand on Sky, Virgin and Now TV. Or you could actually do that wonderful thing of using the internet and actually go to the Sky, to the Gold channel, which would be...
you're asking me? It's
gold.uktv.co.uk.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure if you just put Gold TV in, it'll come up on Mr. Google.
Exactly.
Find it for you. Yeah.
Not frankincense, not myrrh, but I think those will be useful options. I think surely if they're looking to expand maybe frankincense TV, myrrh TV, these could be ways in which they could keep the thing going. It's just a thought.
You should copyright that. That's a good idea, yeah.
Bruce, I'll tell you what, we'll split the profits between us in terms of cut-off. Bruce, it's been fabulous as ever touching base with your good self. I think I say this every year. I say we must actually speak with you, not just at Christmas time, because let's face it, Odessa Howe is for life, not just for Christmas.
That's very kind. Thank you. I'll be back.
So, precisely. I take it you will return. Bruce Odessa, many thanks indeed. Happy holidays.
You. And you too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Frequently say that we mustn't be ill, we must carry on working. We're too busy to catch cold. It's a well-worn phrase. But maybe, just maybe, there are people who are actually getting into work and actually still being not fit for work. And this is not an appropriate way to work through the whole process. New research has actually discovered that almost 6.8 million British people are not entitled to any sick days. To address some of the issues with respect to this, we're delighted to welcome back to Siren after far too long a break. I always like to say he's in many ways the numero uno when it comes to health matters, etc. Good morning, Britain's health editor. I'd say health editor-in-chief, Dr. Hilary Jones. Hi, Hilary.
Hi, Alex. How are you? That's a very nice intro. Thank you.
Very good indeed. And we also have pharmacist Mac Din, the awesome pharmacist Mac Din. How are you, Mac?
Good morning, Alex. I'm fine. Thank you.
Wonderful. Hilary, talk us through this particular research. And was it a matter of surprise, or did you think, well, that's what British people are, stiff upper lip, we stagger on through because we're so afraid of jobs and all the rest of the bits and pieces?
Yeah, I am surprised by this, because as a doctor, you want people when they're genuinely sick to rest. The body is fighting an infection, whether it's a cold or the flu, and you need that energy to do that. So if you're struggling into work, soldiering on because of, you know, a fear of losing money, or a guilt complex that you think you've got no cover at work and you're landing your colleagues in it, or you're just frightened of your security of your job, then that's a worry, because it means that people are going to take longer to recover. They're suffering unduly at work. Productivity probably isn't very good, and they're risking passing transmitting the virus on to other people. So, you know, it's incredible. I mean, this ASDA research is really interesting. 6.8 million, as you say, are not entitled to sick pay for days off at all. Now, they're losing, on average, based on an average monthly pay, they're losing £309 a week. So they're thinking, I'm going to try and go. I've got to go in. I can't afford not to go in. So that's a concern. And according to the Office of National Statistics, that last year was the lowest year on record for taking sick days. So what's happening is that people are fearful of their jobs. And contrary to this popular myth that we're a nation of shirkers, we're absolutely not. We're the opposite. The work ethic is taking over, and we're struggling into work sick.
Yeah, indeed. 74% of employed adults admitting that they feel obliged to come into work even if they weren't well. And again, some problems from that perspective. I mean, Mac, within the pharmacist profession, I mean, clearly from that point of view, you always expect a bit like you never expect Dr. Hilary to be anything less than 100% healthy. It's presumably the same with pharmacists as well. Do you find similar stresses and strains occur with yourselves?
That's correct. So, I mean, what we encourage all our professionals and even our pharmacy colleagues to do, and within the wider colleagues in our store, is to actually get a flu vaccine. This is all preventable. The flu vaccine only costs a little as £7, and they're in a fantastic location where we're convenient, open 7 days a week and weekends. So just preventing this service is just really, really good idea to go after. The other point I'd like to mention is the service is cost customers £7, but there's patients out there who are at greater risk of catching the flu vaccine and have further complications associated with this. So those patients such as asthmatics, diabetes, people who are over the age of 65 years and over can get a free flu vaccine either at the GP surgery or at any community pharmacy. So again, that's available as well.
Indeed, we actually followed through with Amelia Lilly, who's performing in pantomime this season at Lincoln as a diabetic. She has availed herself of a flu jab. And Dr. Hillary, presumably it's not just a case of, well, you know, we'll take a flu jab and work through that. This is a genuine way in which it can address that issue of if you can't afford to take time off, this is a possible solution.
I think it's money well spent, I really do. What we know is that the flu vaccine is effective. It won't protect you against the common cold, of course not, but it does protect you against the four worst circulating viruses that are around globally. So we base the manufacture of the vaccine on what's going on in the southern hemisphere, because what goes on there in their winter generally comes here afterwards. And last year was a bad year for flu. There were an extra 15,000 deaths related to the complications of flu. And it's the best way of preventing a nasty illness. It's a horrible illness anyway, even if you're a fit, healthy person. If you've already got a chronic illness like angina or other heart disease, if you've got respiratory problems, chronic obstructive airways disease or asthma, as we've heard, you know, it's a major thing. So protect yourself. I would certainly have a vaccination. There are many people who are eligible for free NHS, in fact, a third of the population, eligible for free flu vaccines. And I would certainly encourage people to make themselves available for that.
It's also worth noting that it is important to actually stay at home and rest, because the body has amazing recuperative powers, but not if we're overdriving it all the time.
Absolutely. You're going to recover more quickly. You're going to get a less severe illness. Doctors know that bed rest, paracetamol, ibuprofen and plenty of fluids is the key thing. And if you're in a vulnerable group and you're not recovering within 3 or 4 days, or you're worried about complications, then call 111 or your GP and let them know that you need to be seen.
And finally, best place to go to for further information would be?
Now, for further information, visit asda.com, search under the store locator for your local pharmacy.
Brilliant. There we are. Dr. Hillary Jones and pharmacist Magdin, we salute you both. Keep well, stay healthy. I know you will, because it's positivity. It's in the contracts, basically. Yeah, and hopefully, again, we'll speak shortly about more positive health matters. Many thanks indeed, gentlemen.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Exactly who act so different around me. Cause you're a good girl and you know it. I know exactly who you could be. Oh, just hold on, we're going home. Just hold on, we're going home. It's hard to do these things alone. Just hold on.
You're listening to the Midweek Drive interviews on the Siren Radio, a special end of year reflection on interviews you may have missed. Coming up, we will be speaking to Simon Garner and Duncan Gordon, talking about Walker's Crisps recyclability and poetry. We've also got Lucy Alexander chatting about the best way to actually host parties and more here on Siren Radio.
Prime ministers and presidents may come and go, but the certainty of exemplary entertainment on the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Editions remains.
Well, in many cases, it would seem that the humble crisp packet has finally about to actually burst onto the scene as being a wonderful recycling genius in so many ways. We probably waited for years for this to happen, and finally today it can be said that Walker's has partnered with TerraCycle to actually produce a whole new wonderful world for the life of a crisp packet. And to talk about this and more, who better than Senior Director at Walker's, the fabulous Duncan Gordon. How are you, Duncan?
I'm very well, thank you. Good morning.
Good, very good. Now, this is ideal in many ways. I mean, all of those comments that have been said over the years about, oh, make sure your crisp packets are suitably disposed of and so on and so forth. Finally, it seems that they could end up in outdoor furniture, in trays, in roofing and flooring. It's superb news for recycling crisp packets.
Yeah, absolutely. We're really excited to be launching the UK's first crisp packet recycling scheme nationwide today. And we really want to make sure as many people get involved as possible, so we've made it free and simple to use.
It does seem as though it's one of those ideas that, literally, why haven't people thought of this before? Because, I mean, we've had crisp packets certainly for, well, nigh on the best part of a century, really. And yet, you know, we've never quite come around to this sort of package with a recycler's TerraCycle.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously our crisp packets are made to keep the crisp very tasty and fresh. But the challenge is they're quite difficult to recycle, either at the recycling centre to collect them and aggregate them together, or then to process them. Hence why we partner with TerraCycle, who are specialists in making or recycling things that are very difficult to recycle. And we're launching the new nationwide scheme.
Now, clearly, the Walker's brand ambassador, a certain Mr. Gary Lineker, is actively supporting this whole process. But again, this is something which presumably anybody who actually sort of appreciates the joys of a Walker's crisp, etc., can actually get involved with.
Yes, absolutely. And we're not just making it for Walker's crisp. We'll take any brand of crisps into the recycling scheme. And there's two ways that people can get involved. Go on to our website and look for your nearest recycling drop-off point. That's walkers.co.uk/recycle. There's a couple of hundred at the moment, and that will be increasing in number over time. Or collect them all together in an old cardboard box, download a courier label from our website, and then we'll come and pick them up.
Now, that's the thing which I found particularly interesting, the notion that you can actually dial in recycling so that people will actually come and collect you. I mean, presumably you're looking at a significant amount for those things to be put together. Do you want people just turning up on the door for like six packets, really?
Yes. I mean, we will take any number of crisp packets, but ideally, because this is an environmental scheme after all, we'd rather people get together their crisp packets in quite large numbers and then we'll come and pick them up.
Presumably this is also very good news for schools, colleges, all sorts of public institutions that where they're using sort of crisp packets. You could actually have firms having an individual crisp box package collection thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of the recycling drop-off points are those kind of public centres, so community centres or shops. I was in a dry cleaners last week that's acting as a recycling drop-off point. And the other benefit for this is that those people, if they can aggregate all of their crisp packets together in large numbers, the other benefit for the scheme is that they can earn some money for their local charities.
Which is absolutely fantastic. Now, Walker's are obviously planning to make all of the packaging 100% recyclable, compostable, or indeed biodegradable by 2025. So this is obviously a huge step towards that objective.
Yes, absolutely. So this scheme allows us in the short term to recycle our current crisp packaging, and we've got some people working really hard. We're investing tens of millions of pounds to reinvent our crisp packets to allow us to make them really easy to recycle in the future, as you say, or biodegradable or compostable. And our target is to do that by 2025. It's a really difficult challenge to crack.
Duncan, what's your own particular favourite flavour of crisps?
Well, mine is actually salt and vinegar.
Is
How about
it?
You?
Well, do you know, actually, this is going to be unusual. I did quite like the sprout version that was brought out recently. I thought that was excellent. And I also have a fondness for lamb and mint sauce. Both minority tastes, but if you ever bring them out once more, I'll be first in the queue.
No, that's great. Sprouts are available in the shops now. Lots of people are enjoying them. And as you say, eat your packet of crisps. And then recycle the crisp packet.
That sounds so superb. It's just a no-brainer. Walkers.co.uk/recycle, presumably the best place to go to find out further details.
Absolutely.
Duncan Gordon, Senior Director at Walkers. Many thanks indeed. Take care now.
Take care. Thank you.
Do you know your shonen from your shoujo? Do you write your crush's name in your notebook, but not in your special notebook? Are you two being held against your will inside your school by a monochromatic bear? Okay, maybe not that one. But if any of these do apply to you, then tune in to Siren Radio with me, Lita Rosen, every first and third Monday at 12 p.m. for awesome music and anime news from Japan, as well as the head-scratching composition conundrum.
Yes, it would seem that as we head towards this wonderful party season, British folk will actually be spending upwards of £111 on extra everyday items they forgot when hosting over the Christmas period. 10 most forgotten items include extra chairs, gravy boats, cutlery, ice buckets and table decorations. Now, the best person to actually go to seek advice and sage wisdom when it comes to this matter has to be the awesome presenter extraordinaire, Lucy Alexander. How are you, Lucy?
Oh my gosh, do you know that is the best introduction I've ever had. Lovely, lovely speaking to you today, and I'd like to say happy Christmas to you.
Oh my, well indeed, happy holidays as well, Lucy. We reciprocate in all sorts of ways from that point of view. This little survey, though, that does suggest, though, that in addition to all of the stresses and strains of coordinating the whole thing, we're forgetting things. It's just can't help forgetting bits and pieces.
Well, I think Christmas just puts a lot of pressure on everybody. People either love it or they hate it. Now, the research by Gumtree reveals that while half of Brits say they're excited about the prospect of hosting, 27% feel under pressure, that was me, and 11% wholly unprepared. And the top stresses are things like cooking, keeping everybody entertained, and let's not forget the expense, because people spend so much money on Christmas. In fact, just under 4 billion quid on extra everyday items, which is a crazy amount of dosh, Alex. I'm sure you've not spent that much.
Well, indeed. And obviously, it would need to be spent on your good self, Lucy, just to actually sort of work the whole thing through, clearly.
I'd rather
on that
just
basis.
Buy myself gifts, exactly.
Yeah, indeed. But is it, should we just tie knots in our ties? Should we actually just tie knots in our handkerchiefs? Should we just make sure that we do, is it a case of we go back to lists? You can't beat a good list.
Oh, I love a good, you know, I'm so glad you said that. I'm such a list girl. I think what you've got to do is you've just got to be prepared. So don't leave everything to the last minute. First and foremost, get your list sorted. Make sure you've got everything you need, okay? So if you've got people visiting you, have your spare towels, get the bedroom ready. You know, you can do lovely little things for your guests, like put a rail in so that they can unpack and hang all their clothes up. Be resourceful as well. So think about things like if you've not got enough fridge space, you can use a cool box and put all your food and drink and keep it chilled in there. You can make your own Christmas decorations with the kids. You know, there's so much you can do to make your Christmas work, but be prepared is the motto, I think.
It's a bit like being a Girl Scout, but ready for Christmas, really.
Exactly,
sort of
I was never a Girl Scout.
Well, I don't know. 29 years of age seems to be the time when most British folk first invite friends and family into their home. Could be an interesting thing there. You've got your pressure from the in-laws, conceivably, and a whole variety of other bits and pieces there. But generally, we find that we'll entertain about 8 times over the sort of perspective of life, with most people actually welcoming between 6 and 10 people. I thought the dinner party was a thing of the past, but obviously that's long gone.
No, people are loving to entertain, and I think when you're young and, you know, the first time homeowners out there want to bring their friends and family together and host a Christmas, I mean, it is a very daunting prospect. I was 20 years old when I first hosted my Christmas, very young, thought I knew everything and just had the biggest Christmas Day disaster ever. I had a little mini fire in, I shouldn't laugh actually, in my bathroom, and had to have all of my guests sitting in the pub for 4 hours while the fire engine came and put the fire out. So, you know, moving on from that, I just think 27, you're not too young, but if you do what I say, be prepared, make sure you've got all those things that you're likely to need. People forget extra chairs, a bigger table. You know, you've got to think about the extra plates and bowls and the cutlery. And I would always say, lay your table the night before. Make sure you've got everything you need. And, you know, I think people forget about the ice bucket, you know, the gravy boat. We all want to have a bit of gravy, so let's not just have one gravy boat. Let's get a few in.
Lucy, again, eminently sensible. Well, I must admit, you could actually set an interesting fashion for actually having a fire in your bathroom. It's extraordinary.
It was not ideal, and I thought somebody had burnt some toast, and oh no, there was a little fire. So I think my guest had a great time because we did spend 4 hours in the pub before we went home and I started cooking. But anyway, moving on from that.
It's a way forward. I mean, I'm sure it'll make a great motion picture. I mean, in the days to come, we'll be talking about it for centuries, effectively. Now, clearly, people can follow you via Twitter at LucyAlexanderTV,
which is an ace site
with manner of wonderful things. Instagram, of course, .com/LucyAlexanderTV. Anywhere else that you'd recommend, Lucy, people should actually go to find out further details about what we've been speaking about today? Gumtree, perhaps?
Yep, Gumtree is a great way to start. I mean, there's so much you can buy. And even if you want anything last minute, you know, it's still not too late to get everything you need. So go online. It can really, really help your money go further over the festive season for all the items that you think that you're going to need for Christmas. And you can save so much money because you don't want to be one of those Brits spending just under £4 million.
Lucy, we knew it was going to be an awesome telephonic link. I'll say it was an amazingly awesome telephonic link. So fantastic stuff.
Alex, you're being too nice to me today. Listen, make sure you have a fantastic Christmas as well, and all your listeners.
Only I'm Mr. Lonely, I have nobody for my own. I'm lonely, I'm Mr. Lonely, wish I had someone to call on the phone, for I'm a soldier, a lonely soldier, away from home, through no wish of my own. That's why I'm lonely, I'm Mr. Lonely. I wish that I could go back home. No letters in the mail. I've been forgotten, yeah, forgotten. Oh, how I wonder, how is it I failed? For I'm a soldier, a lonely soldier, away from home, through no wish of my own. That's why I'm lonely, I'm Mr. Lonely. I wish that I could go back home.
Now, it would seem that as far as the East Midlands is concerned, over half of the fine folk would say it's important to handwrite Christmas cards. And nearly 4 in 10 actually say their favourite way to receive a Christmas message is through a card in the post. Now, just as I actually have finally got round to pretty much going almost all electronic, it seems that actually, no, the traditional Christmas card still has a part to play. And who better to start talking about this than two fabulous individuals? First of all, ace author extraordinaire, the author or editor of 17 works of non-fiction. That's the fabulous Simon Garfield. How are you, Simon?
Hello.
I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. And, of course, we also have from the Royal Mail at that August postage, Mark Street. How are you, Mark?
I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. Mark, this is good news for the post office, isn't it? I mean, in an era where technically we're all sort of looking to do our sort of electronic card writing, etc., that maybe, you know, that traditional card through the post is good news.
Well, I think it is. You know, you can see that people still have a love of Christmas cards. It's very much part of the fabric of British Christmas traditions. And, you know, the research knows that there's absolutely no let-up in people's desire to send Christmas cards to one another. And this even stretches to, younger people from 18 to 24, with more than half saying that they would have a preference of sending a card as a way of spreading festive cheer rather than, any sort of text message or an email.
So, Simon, would you say that actually just sending Happy Crimbo with a smiley face and a thumbs up via electronic means is not necessarily in keeping with the whole season's aspect?
It sort of shows a lack of kind of care and love, I think. I mean, I think, you know, we send, and I, as much as anyone, love sending texts all year round and using my phone pretty much all the time. I shouldn't admit, but at Christmas, there's something else, isn't there? Because you're thinking of Christmas past, you're thinking often of people maybe who you haven't seen, who you want to send a special message to, and it just means more because it's handwritten and it comes through the post, and, you know, it just expresses more love, I think.
And I'm sure in years to come, Simon, perhaps even a couple of centuries, a handwritten letter from your good self, Simon Garfield, will be auctioned for hundreds of thousands of pounds.
I think the unautographed one will be worth more. But, there is something about the tradition of the career Christmas card that I think will carry on. We have no idea what technology lies around the corner. But I think, as long as we still have letterboxes and we can remember how to write, and it's not just all thumbs on keyboards and phones, I think it's something that we will continue to see and receive a huge amount of kind of joy from as well.
Mark, last week, of course, we did a special feature with Santa Claus himself, who actually informed us in terms of the best way to contact him via Royal Mail and so on, with a return address, clearly, to ensure that he can possibly write back. But looking ahead to the sort of Christmas cards as well, from that perspective, did you feel a few years ago that actually the cards were an endangered species and that actually this is very much bucking the trend?
You know what? I don't think we've ever thought that. And at this time of year, I tend to go around to a lot of our mail centres, our large mail centres. And when you're at the mail centres and you see the amount of cards going through our machines, they're being sorted by our people, the postmen and postwomen are taking around the houses, around the streets and the local communities, you very quickly get a sense that there's no real decline in Christmas cards at all, and that, you know, each one of these cards is a very personal expression of love or friendship between two people, wherever they may be in the country. So you never really get that sense, and I think this research sort of backs that up.
Birmingham, Leeds and Newcastle are the major residents who apparently place the most value in Christmas cards in the country. Presumably Liverpool, London and other cities are not quite up there from that point of view.
You can never explain regional differences,
No,
I mean, it's great that Newcastle, emerges as the number one, and I'm sure that...
They've got to be number one in something, let's face it. I mean, the football is moving to a different line from that point of view.
I make no comment.
Indeed. Now, the other sort of thing was that the survey also revealed that many people were voting Christmas cards as indeed more significant than turkey, more significant than carol singing, and even the annual Christmas shopping trip. So, again, that suggests that the Christmas cards have got some longevity and life in them yet.
Yeah, and I think it's something about a Christmas card sort of decorating your home as well, which is important. You know, you have them on your mantelpieces, or maybe you have them hung sort of diagonally across your living room. So there's an element that, and obviously they last longer than the turkey, even than the biggest, fattest, heaviest turkey. And there is something, about a Christmas card traditionally lighting up a room. It's true. And tradition, we Brits love tradition, don't we? We really do.
Yeah.
But, you know, certainly in our house, the strings go up and then we festoon the cards along the strings. So it's very much part of our, you know, Christmas decorations.
Simon, you, in terms of lighting up the room, clearly your writing always does. And you've actually helped to produce a piece of poetry to celebrate this most treasured of festive tradition.
Yeah,
now, do we get it?
As you said, I'm an author of many books.
Indeed.
Not many of them are poetry books. In fact, none. So, gird your loins. And I've already been compared to Pam Ayres, the male Pam Ayres on this one. So here we go. But of course I'm proud of this. So I will read you a couple of verses if you like.
Of course.
Okay. So how to make your effort jump out from the pile. Maybe send something handmade this year with cute and embarrassing photos, perhaps. A collage of all those you hold dear. Make it legible, personal, original and fresh. Your sole mission, a smile on their face. But best leave that glitter tube in the drawer, because it always ends up all over the place.
Wow. I mean, you can see the response you're getting from the citizens of Lincoln there. I mean, they've just gone crazy.
Crazy. You know, it's rushing out. They're buying their cards.
I'm thinking, actually, Simon, not so much Pam Ayres. We're more Carol Ann Duffy territory here. I mean,
this is
slow.
God, I don't know. You know, it's sort of like, I'll take anything I can get at this point.
Well, awesome, in any way, shape or form. Mark, is there a best place to go to find out further details about this, apart from, obviously, the Royal Mail's very own website?
Well, of course, you know, you can go to www.royalmail.com and find out more details, but really it's all about you, your friends and who you hold dear.
It's been fantastic sharing some thoughts with your good self in a kind of audio Christmas card for Siren Radio today. Simon Garfield, author extraordinaire, and Mark Street, head of campaigns for the Royal Mail. Will you be kind enough to return in 2019, gentlemen?
Of course we will. We're making a new tradition.
In which case, we'll simply say happy holidays. Take care now.
And to you. Thanks.
If you're one of those busy parents who are running around doing a whole range of other bits and pieces, you might be interested in recent research which has suggested that a general morning routine will amount to an additional 10 hours, 15 minutes a week on top of your 9-to-5 job as well. Public poll has actually revealed that 80% of working parents admit to getting hangry from failing to eat a proper breakfast, leading 44% to have arguments with colleagues, which certainly isn't good. This research conducted by Kellogg's Nutri-Grain is clearly of imports to the nation, so we need to have somebody of equal import to connect with us, and why not the ace nutritionist, blogger and extraordinary individual soul that is Laura Clark. How are you, Laura?
I'm very well, thank you.
Marvellous. Laura, you're a parent.
Yes.
Did this research resonate with yourself? Did you
yes.
think? Yeah, okay.
Absolutely. It felt like it was written just about me.
Right, right. So, and again, it is a lot of stuff that has to be done, multitasking and so on. Is it a case of people often talk traditionally about the breakfast, it's the most important meal of the day, but, you know, there is that tendency to skip, to move away from that sort of things because we are so busy.
Absolutely. I mean, Nutri-Grain commissioned this study because they wanted to put the spotlight on the multitasking parent and what they have to go through in a morning before they even start their 9-to-5 job. And they found that parents are completing an average of 43 tasks every morning, which, as you said, is equating to over 10 hours a week of additional work. And I think in the modern day, when we are under so much pressure, eating and what to eat really falls down the priority list.
And we can't certainly go back to the days where, for certain classes of society, I suppose arguably there are still folk who will have nannies and assistants and folk to actually do that for them. But the vast majority of us, you know, whatever sort of system we're working through, we're having to juggle a whole range of issues with respect to that.
And
this is clearly where wearing your nutritionist hat, you can hopefully provide some possible suggestions and solutions in terms of ways to cope with those mid-morning challenges.
Well, I think, first of all, we have to accept that we're not all perfect and that eating something and considering the on-the-go options is great, because it's better to have something than nothing at all. Obviously, from the minute we leap out of bed in the morning, our body and our brain is burning up glucose and really needing quite a lot of fuel to start that very hectic day. So it's really important to get something in, even if that is by the time you get to work. It doesn't have to be, you know, the sort of the traditional sitting around the breakfast table laughing and joking. You know, that certainly doesn't really happen in our house. But it's important to get something in your body so that it begins to fuel itself and work a little bit more productively. Sources of whole grain are really important, and also sources of B vitamins, like the Nutri-Grain bars, are great because B vitamins help to release energy from our food. So, you know, that obviously makes a big difference to then what happens inside our body.
The key thing, of course, is ensuring that, although you said you put anything in it, no, energy drinks, not good, all sorts of other aspects. You want to kind of ensure that what you're taking is something which is, you know, without going into nutritional supplements, appropriate and works through that. And it's quick, it's relatively fast, but it also is not going to do you some long-term damage.
Yeah, of course. We're trying to regulate our blood glucose levels at the end of the day. We're trying to create a beautiful undulating hill effect that regulates us across the day. And generally, if we don't start the day particularly well, if we've got through till 11 o'clock and perhaps we still haven't really considered what we're going to put in our bodies, then that's going to take a real hit through the morning and then later on into the afternoon. We're really trying to regulate what we're eating by providing our bodies with as balanced a food choice as possible.
43 tasks. The number of objects.
Amazing, isn't it?
Exactly. I think last minute homework is an interesting one. Defrosting the dinner, another challenging line from that point of view.
Yeah, absolutely.
Again, these all sort of mount up to stress levels and so on. Snacking's often been suggested as a possible solution, but again, that's another sort of task from that point. Would you say actually, you know, it's best to actually go with that breakfast and then, you know, wait until later in the day, as opposed to sort of when you refuel, shall we say?
Well, one tip I always give to parents is that, you know, you are just as important as the rest of the family, including the cat. So I do think it's important that you do give consideration to what you're going to have, even if that is something on the go. But also to try and do it as mindfully as possible and to recognise and to acknowledge that you're eating. And sometimes the craziness of the morning means that you just simply haven't got the time to do that. And maybe on your commute to work, you have just got a little bit more headspace and you can really tune in to what you're eating and take your time over it, rather than hailing it, as you're sort of flying out the door. I think it's important to try and give yourself that time, even if it's only 5 minutes, when you've got a slightly more a clear head and, you know, the kids are out of your hair, so to speak.
Lots of examples of obviously Kellogg's adverts over the years, and I think the halcyon days of the 1950s for some, where effectively the men went off to work on it with a bowl of Kellogg's cornflakes, totally refreshed and resorted through. Maybe we've moved on a wee bit from those. Obviously, you can eat Kellogg's cornflakes at any time of the day, really. But in terms of this, would the Kellogg's website be the best place to go to find out further information about the kind of things we've been talking about today, Laura?
Yes, absolutely. They'll have lots of information there on the products and the nutritional breakdown of what those products are giving you. Absolutely take a look there.
Presumably your very own website and blog details as well for Laura Clark will obviously
work. Yes, and I do a lovely little vlog with my son Sam, and we talk about lots of things to do with snacking and just the real practicalities. It's called Trolley to Tummy, and it's really just about how we can try and eat, healthy snacks and a healthy balanced diet, but also just giving a nod to the realities of parenting and the craziness of the world that we live in.
It's like T-cubed or TTT, Trolley to Tummy, fantastic stuff. It's genius stuff there. Laura Clark, it's been fantastic sharing some thoughts with your good self today. Two final little lines. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting and relatively calm telephonic link with us? Has it been okay for you?
Great, thank you.
Excellent. And we look forward to hopefully ensuring that you can come back again in the near future and keep us appraised of good nutritional factors without getting angry about the whole
thing. Yes, exactly. I hope you have a less hangry day as a result of talking to me.
The whole system. The classic line, if you're true to your teeth, they'll never be false to you. But it seems that actually a quarter of British folk have actually gone 2 days without actually brushing their teeth, which can't be good in any way, shape or form, as well as feeling a little bit icky. And a fifth of adults are scared to go to the dentist, with 19% thinking it's not necessary. Well, to start addressing some of these reasons why, and possibly stressing the importance of why it's important to look after our teeth, who better than award-winning dentist extraordinaire Dr. Mark Hughes. How are you, Mark?
I'm well, thank you, Alex. Good morning.
Very good. It's worth noting, of course, no relation to the former Welsh footballer who's currently in charge of Southampton.
None whatsoever.
He could be talented in all sorts of ways, but perhaps not that routine. Were you shocked and surprised by the findings of this survey, Mark?
Well, I think, first of all, the sheer number of people that either ignore or put off brushing their teeth. I was quite shocked at the size of the percentage.
No, again, allowing for that. I mean, I touch wood, go on a regular basis. I go on a once a year thing for the checkup. I don't usually do the 6 monthly ones. I do brush pretty much on a daily basis. And as I said, if you don't brush your teeth, you do get that slight build. I can't understand. I can understand partly maybe the concern about the dental checks, but they're very important for all sorts of reasons. But why do people brush their teeth? I mean, surely that's just, it's a bit like combing your hair as a matter of course, really, isn't
well,
it?
Well, one would think so. Washing your face, you know, having a shower every morning, it seems to me like it should be a natural part of the daily routine, but apparently we don't think so.
29% of men have gone 2 days or more without brushing their teeth. 17% of women. Those are significant statistics.
They are indeed. And the effects of that, the fact that you know, what happens after 2 days of not brushing your teeth, if we could all see the bacteria growing and what it actually does in there, I think we'd probably think twice about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, we do take so much detritus into our mouths unwittingly. I mean, we, as well as clearly tea, coffee, a whole range of other aspects within that. It seems unusual. Is it perhaps a case of people are just lazy, or they actually want to press a button? I mean, we hear obviously about the joys of electric toothbrushes and the importance of that side of things. I must admit, I'm a traditional toothbrush person. I still haven't made the switch to electric. But is it a case where we're just waiting for somebody to actually do it for us?
Well, the stats are interesting. I mean, laziness comes out as quite a high number. 15% being drunk decide to ignore it or too tired. I think if somebody was to do it for us, it would probably help. But, you know, it's such a simple thing. 2 minutes of your morning, 2 minutes of your evening. At the same time that you're grooming, surely we could all take part in that exercise.
Indeed so. Interesting enough, I was astounded to find that we still have folk who actually use toothpaste on the end of their finger. That's, again, not a good way for... I mean, it's rather like sort of... You know, there used to be a habit a few years ago, you're probably far too young to remember, where people used to use toothpicks after a meal. That was, and I always thought that was a little bit questionable in terms of having to dig out stuff from...
Well, I remember my grandfather doing that, and I am not that young. But at least that's doing something to remove detritus, to remove debris. It's part of the cleaning process. If only we all adopted some kind of habits, but to leave it for 2 days, you can imagine what a person's breath might smell like.
A couple of centuries ago, of course, for actually less than that, 100 or so years ago, people actually would insist basically they couldn't wait until they had all their dentures removed and actually replaced with false teeth or wooden ones and various other bits and pieces. I think we've moved on from that, hopefully. But presumably, if you don't brush your teeth, if you don't look after yourself, as far as your dental issues are concerned, you will lose your teeth. There's no question about it.
Eventually, it's going to happen at some point, yes. And some of us are more susceptible than others. So the prevention is so important. Using a great brush, it makes life so much easier for us.
Presumably we also should be ensuring that the brushes are kept updated, because it's pointless actually using a brush which is, shall we say, 2.5 to 3 years old.
Well, it would be exactly the same as trying to clean anything, clean your car, clean your house with a dodgy brush. It's the importance of the actual implement is well researched, and a really good sonic or electric toothbrush can make such a difference.
Just go back briefly to the frequency of visiting your dentist, etc. I've mentioned that I tend to be a once a year person. I know there's a 6-monthly sort of scenario, but is the ideal really every 6 months you should actually go, or is once a year okay, or is it a case of no, at least just visit?
Well, there's two reasons to go. One is to have the dentist check you over, make sure there's nothing going on, and either the dentist or a dental hygienist to clean your teeth professionally. So in my opinion, a minimum of twice a year with a hygienist or dentist for cleaning. And for some people, they should go twice a year. For others, once a year for their checkups. But, you know, if we're going to make it simple, go twice a year, get cleaned, get checked, and then you're going to be ahead of any problems.
I was intrigued this time around. For the first time in a few years, I actually had the X-ray just to check that everything was okay, and I was, I suppose, mildly concerned when the dentist actually left the room whilst the X-ray machine was going on. It was I can understand why, but I just thought, what, you're zapping me with radiation here. But it's I think the fact of the matter is, going to the dentist is a lot less traumatic than it used to be. And of course, the great news is you can get stickers now, as opposed to getting a sweet to actually say there's a good person for actually going to the dentist.
Well, yes, we tend to give those to the under 10, but
Well, I'm just thinking motivation. Maybe it's something in the adult thing where we sort of just look through that as well.
It's a thought. Let's get stickers for adults. Great idea.
And finally, where can people go to find out further information about some of the things we've talked about today in terms of information and details?
Well, the research was done by Foreo, and on their website, www.foreo.com, on their blog, there's great information about this. And it's wonderful to see a company that makes such a fabulous product for cleaning your teeth doing some research, finding out some great information. So go and have a look on their blog. It's great.
Dr. Mark, it's been fantastic sharing some thoughts with you. Good stuff today. We've got two final customer service questions. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today, Mark?
Very good.
So I take it you'll be able to join us in the not-too-distant future, and we keep smiling, yes?
Hopefully so. Thank you, Alex.
Many thanks indeed. Take
this
care now.
Bye. Philip Hurdwood, voiceover artist, writer and Renaissance man, congratulating you on your excellent taste for choosing this station and podcast.